And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Light Behind the Darkness, was written by Joseph Mendel.
Let others tell the facts of time and place, or list the years of his life and the events that filled them. Let others labor to construct with words the wavering shadow of a man. I am not content with shadows. I begin with a night late in May of 1916, when a million soldiers, I among them, crouched beneath the parapet of trenches protecting the French city of Verdun, facing a million German soldiers in a larger, menacing circle. There were no shadows, no sounds, only the dark emptiness of fear and waiting.
Get your head down. Do you hear me, Blomberg? Get down.
Why are you whispering, Marnie?
The whole German army is out there.
They know we're here. It's too dark to see, but they know.
Yes, they know. Still, you have the feeling that
if you whisper, if you hold your breath, you can hold back the artillery, the machine guns? That you can keep it still and safe and dark? Is that what you think, Marnie?
Never mind what I think. What about you staring over the parapet? Well, what can you see?
Nothing.
What are you looking for in the dark?
I don't know. Or I don't remember. And something out there is supposed to remind me.
Remind you of what? Bah, is it fool? You're frightened like the rest of us. Frightened of the guns, of the tanks, frightened of the cloud of poison gas that might come any minute without warning.
Look, Marnie, look there.
Where? What is it, Blomberg? What?
The sky's getting light. There in the east, you see?
Yes. Now it begins. It always begins at daybreak.
I remember, Marnie. I remember what he said.
Get down, you fool.
I remember the words he spoke.
Ooh, what are you talking about?
Listen. The time is right, he said. The day has come, it is very near, when the world will grow gentler. The first small candle of morning. Too pale to light the dark sky. The only light in a dark world. The light reminded me. And I heard his words louder than the roar of cannon. 10,000 guns spoke, but his voice was heard. His name was Abraham Isaac Cook. There in the trenches before Verdun, I remembered him. I saw him as clearly as the first time, almost a year before, in a library in Switzerland.
I'm sorry, sir. The book that you want is in use.
But I asked you to reserve it for me.
Until 11 o'clock. It is now, let me see, precisely 14 and one half minutes past 11.
I know I'm late, but...
I don't make the rules, sir. He asked for the book, and he was entitled to it.
Who? Who has it?
There, at the second table, with his back toward us.
Thank you. Excuse me, but could I ask you...
Yes? My face startles you?
No, no. It's only that I'm surprised.
I see. You are surprised that I stroke my beard over book two of Aristotle's Natural Science, rather than a volume of the Talmud.
Oh, no. That is, you must admit it's unusual. I mean, for a rabbi.
And how do you know that I'm a rabbi?
You are, aren't you?
Rabbi means teacher. As you see, I am myself still endeavoring to learn.
You are a rabbi.
And you are perhaps a student at the university?
Well, that's no use anymore. Not now in the midst of war. I'm going back to France.
But Switzerland is neutral. You are interned for the duration of the war. Is it not so?
I won't ask permission to leave. As soon as arrangements are made, I'm going back.
About this book...
I'll come back later when you're finished with it. Although, why you... No, it's not for me to ask.
Troubles you that I studied Greek philosophy?
Well, it's only that...
I should not waste time in economics or modern science or other such studies, eh?
Well, I tell you frankly, I've not been to services in a synagogue since I was bar mitzvah, but it seems to me... Is this how a rabbi helps his people?
Ah, if one could only be certain. And yet, to help, you must first understand. And to understand even one man, it may be necessary to understand the whole world.
There is a great need to understand Abraham Isaac Cook. He was then chief rabbi of Jaffa in Palestine, which he left to visit Europe only to be caught by the outbreak of war. Trapped, like all of Europe, by the brutal idiocy of war.
It's true, Blumberg. World civilization is crumbling. The human spirit is weakened. And darkness is enveloping all the nations.
You say it calmly, as if you're reading from a book of ancient history.
Yes, it has happened before.
It's happening now, to you, to me, to this world.
And yet there is a light behind the darkness, if you will only look. The light of goodness, wisdom, justice.
Yes, I know, the clear light of God, you've said it before, but they are only words you use to keep you content in the dark. Sorry, Rabbi Cook, I have no right.
So you think I am content? My friend, there is a melancholy of the soul which struggles in its cage, reaching out toward the light, toward a finer life, clearer and brighter, yet failing to attain it. You shake your head?
Oh, you won't catch me again. Soon you'll smile and find a story.
There is a story. About the holy Baal Shem Tov, who once went on a long journey.
There, you see?
He sat in the carriage, and instantly it seemed to fly so fast that the horses, not knowing what was happening, passed the inn where they were usually fed. And then the second inn.
Rabbi Cook.
Now wait. It finally occurred to the animals that they must have become men and would not be given food until evening. But evening came, and the carriage still raced on. So that the horses agreed they must have been turned into angels and no longer required food and drink. But just then...
The carriage stopped.
Exactly. They were unharnessed and they buried their noses in the oats. Just like starved horses. Content, you say? I'll tell you something, Blumberg. As long as we are in a like situation... We could do well to be content. You understand?
I want to, Rabbi Cook. I want to understand. But there's so little time. Remember his words, Marnie.
Listen, Blumberg, listen.
But I don't understand.
It's clear enough. It is daylight and the barrage is stopping. They won't attack today.
The squad leader here. Leave a sentry in the trench and the rest of you can get some rest in the dugouts. You hear that, Marnie?
It looks good, eh, Sergeant?
Oh, yes. Post one sentry in each sector of the trench.
What's the matter with you, Blumberg? What's so funny?
It looks good.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
Standing all night in mud over your knees, crawling with lice?
Yeah, don't be so finicky.
And out there in no man's land, the rats among the corpses, you like the way it looks, Marnie?
You know what I mean, Blumberg. There is no attack today.
And there will be one tomorrow.
Maybe so. But if I am careful, if I keep my head down, if a sniper does not pick me for a target, then I have another day to live.
What will you do with this day?
I will make no plans, Blumberg. Only to remain alive until the night. The Bosch are nervous tonight. Can you see anything, Blumberg?
It's too dark.
Maybe we have a patrol out there. Do you think so?
Well, how should I know?
Well, maybe they think so. The Germans, I mean. Or maybe... Listen, they're sending up a flare. There it is. It lights up the shell holes like the street lamps in the Champs-Élysées.
The light of goodness, wisdom, and justice, he said.
Can you see them now? Can you see our patrol? Wait, there's one. Near the tree stump.
The light behind the darkness.
No, that is a dead one. I remember now. Stupid! You are killing a dead man!
The dead, those that have no need to ask. But in the black night of the trenches, if they're done, it was too late to ask. I could only remember the questions asked a year before.
What is it you want of me, Blumberg?
You're in this world, Rabbi. Don't you know what's happening in it?
I know.
Well, how can you? These are new times with new inventions to enable death to drop from the sky or enter with a breath or through calculated hunger.
And if it is so?
It is so. Are you afraid to say it?
There are many things that frighten me, Blumberg. But not reality.
I am afraid. I can see what will happen.
Yes, I think you can.
You don't have to be a scholar or a prophet. You only have to know what men are like.
Only, Blumberg? You say only?
This war will end. There will be peace. That is not peace, but preparation for war. There will be time for more monstrous inventions, more deadly poisons, more devastating weapons.
More subtle refinements of cruelty, of injustice and persecution. I do not dispute.
Then tell me, in God's name, how can you accept such a world?
Is it mine for me to accept or reject?
That's no answer.
So that is what you want. No, Blumberg. You must not ask me for answers.
But...
I can only tell you what I know.
Well, tell me.
You must not ask it, my friend, without also asking the price you will have to pay.
Price for understanding, which the teacher knows, if not he that asks. It is told that Elisha was plowing in the fields, and Elijah came to him and cast his mantle over him. And Elisha left the oxen and said, "Let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow thee." And Elijah looked at him and said, "Go back. For what have I done to thee?" But Elisha did not go back.
The arrangements are made, Blumberg?
For tomorrow. Rabbi Cook, these last 2 weeks we've talked too much or too little.
When you return to your own country, you take a gun.
There's no time left at all now. Rabbi, I do not ask you lightly.
I have told you what can be told in words.
There must be something more than shaping reality to suit your taste.
I did not say that.
Or soothe your soul.
I did not ask your practical soul to shape reality, but to see it.
I've seen the world that God himself has rejected.
You blame him for man's misdoings. You see nothing, only single events, fragments of reality, and you catalog them. You separate them into two categories. This is good and that is evil. The golden days of Solomon, good. The destruction of the temple, evil. The wisdom of the sages here, the pogroms in Russia there. Peace on one side, war on the other.
You look with the same judgment on good and evil.
No, you are the one. In tearing them apart, you blur the difference between them. You never learn that the fragments are part of one reality, and that it is good.
Then teach me.
It cannot be taught like a lesson. You can only come to know it by freeing the soul from its cage.
Show me how.
Go away, take your gun, kill or be killed without knowing why. No. Wait. Listen to me. When you let yourself see not only the branches, but also the roots and the whole tree, when you first feel the melancholy of the soul, that will be a sign of the beginning. The first light behind the darkness.
They made it, Blomberg. The patrol is coming back. Oh, just in time, Sergeant. It is light enough now for the Boche to see you without a flare.
There are only four of you, Sergeant.
Dumont was hit.
You left him out there?
200 yards from the trench in a shell hole.
Give me your canteen, Marnie.
What are you doing?
Mine's almost empty.
I asked you a question, Blomberg. What are you going to do?
What you should have done, Sergeant.
Don't be a fool. Stay here.
And leave him there, bleeding to death, maybe?
Or dead, maybe.
Well, I'll find out. Take your hand off me.
That was to bring you to your senses. If you want more, hold him, you two. You can size up a man or a situation just like that, eh, Blomberg? You know what's right and wrong, don't you?
Well, I know what...
Shut up! Now listen. Dumas and I, we're from the same village. We work together. Our children play together. Well, it's broad daylight, Blomberg. What makes you think you could bring him back now or even reach him?
I don't know. I could try.
All right, you're a hero. But if he's already dead, what's the use? And if not, what good is it to him if you get killed?
Sergeant,
I know. Well, get some rest, all of you. We'll need some heroes tonight.
Did you hear that? A bird.
Shut up, your voice down.
There are still birds left.
It's too dark for them to see us, Marnie, but they can hear
you. I know, Sergeant. That's all.
How far to the shell hole, Sergeant?
I'm not sure, Blomberg. 50 yards more, maybe 60. Ready, everybody? Let's go.
My gun barrel hit the stone.
Don't move.
They're not even close.
We're out here, but they can't see us.
Maybe we'd be lucky.
We're sending up a flare.
Get down! Bury your noses in the dirt.
They're looking for us. It's light enough now.
Between life and death, there is an interval that is long enough for understanding to enter, if it will. The flare that lit the dark sky illuminated the last corner of remembrance.
Goodbye, my friend.
Rabbi, my hands will hold a gun soon.
Yes?
When the war ends, when I put down the gun, I would like to come back.
Why?
Well, because I'm afraid.
Listen. The fear, the loathing of the gun in your hands, the yearning and striving for the light. Maybe they are a beginning in the dark.
Or an end.
Listen again. The time is ripe. You don't have to be afraid, for the day has come. It is very near when the world will grow gentler.
Abraham Isaac Cook knew this, as certainly as if he himself had been given the promise. His eyes were deep and clear, and he saw the light behind the darkness.
They're coming closer.
They'll find the range soon. Well, it's light enough.
It's always light enough.
Get up and run for the shell hole.
It's light enough if you know what to look for. Let the story end here. Between the light and the dark. In the brief moment between life and death. It is not the same for all men. That which Abraham Isaac Cook knew, some men believe without knowing. And I can only hope. Only this remains to be told. Abraham Isaac Cook returned from Switzerland when the war ended, to become not long afterward chief rabbi of Palestine. Until the day of his death, more than 25 years ago, he wrote much and taught much in the academy that he established, as well as in the streets and in the fields. And with every word of his mouth, he helped to make the world gentler.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Herbert Weiner, spiritual leader of Temple Israel, South Orange, New Jersey. Rabbi Weiner.
It is not easy to express in terms of our day the quality of Abraham Isaac Cook's greatness, for our day frequently measures by quantitative standards. How much did a man do, conquer, acquire? So do we measure fame. Rabbi Cook was, of course, the first chief rabbi of Palestine and did much in the practical spheres of life. He was talented on many levels, but his essential genius was a talent for love, a love that refused to be confined by definitions, boundaries, parties. How do we measure such an accomplishment by standards of our day? And since he was a completely Orthodox Jew, there were paradoxes. He was, for example, a profound scholar interested in every detail of the law. Yet his love for God could not be contained, he confessed, by any cages of the spirit. Let not names, phrases, words swallow our souls, he wrote. He was a saintly mystic. Yet when some rabbis complained that some of the Israeli pioneers seemed disinterested in spiritual accomplishments and overinterested in physical deeds, this mystic said, "But a people can become over-spiritualized, disembodied. And when that happens, the pendulum must swing for a while in the other direction. We must welcome a period for what he called the thickening of the vessels. For strong vessels," he pointed out, "were needed in order to contain powerful spiritual lights, the kind of lights which he was sure would be granted future generations." Cook was, of course, deeply religious, yet he could even see good in atheism. "For there can be a kind of God-denial," he said, "which is the rebellion of the soul against a religious faith that has been ossified and become cramped." To those who complained when this bearded chief rabbi would join in a dance with the so-called non-religious pioneers of the Holy Land, he told a story. In the Holy Temple, there was a room called the Holy of Holies, into which only one man, the high priest, was allowed to enter. And then only at one time of the year, on Yom Kippur. But, he reminded his followers, was the temple built only by the high priests? Did not the ordinary carpenters and hewers of stone also enter and contribute their offering? The Jewish people are today building their Holy of Holies, the Holy Land. All have a portion to contribute to this building, and no one has more right than another to bring an offering, said this Orthodox chief rabbi. It is not surprising, then, that many in Israel and in other lands, too, distressed today by quarrels and divisions which separate party from party, religious from non-religious, wish that Abraham Isaac Cook were still with them. But this great spirit ascended from what he called the world of partial vision, from the world of the branches, to the world of the great roots above in 1935. He left us many commentaries, poems, and essays which reflect the light of his luminous soul. Above all, he left us the shining memory of a life bursting with a love for his people, for the land of Israel, for mankind, and for God, which was strong enough, comprehensive enough, to include and transcend all differences of sect and party, all man-made definitions of faith. The full genius of the Jewish tradition found expression through him, and the souls of future generations will be kindled by his light.
Thank you, Rabbi Weiner. Our eternal light drama today, The Light Behind the Darkness, was written by Joseph Mendel. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Bill Lipton as Victor and Santos Ortega as Rabbi Cook. Others in the cast were Maurice Tarplin, Jim Dukas, and Ellen Muir. This is Vic Rovey. Our program was directed by George Voutsas. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.